Couple done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been.
So good morning, finally. Yeah, I woke up at 3 in the morning. Couldn't go back to sleep. And did. I think it's 5 something. So here we sit, starting 30 minutes late, 34 minutes late. On a show that you're going to enjoy. Alright, and everybody stop with the hate mail, okay? Okay, just back away from the keyboard right now. You're going to hear an interview that I did last night with a young man that I've known since 2004. I served on the city council in Grand Forks, North Dakota with his dad. And you'll hear the story of how we met. I was on my way to promote somebody. And we're in the only Marine officer for miles and miles and miles. You get opportunities like that. So that's how Ben Lunick and I meet. So had a chance to interview him last night. I've interviewed him before, but he's done... Since the last time I interviewed him, he's done some great things in his life. Just by way of introduction, Ben is a single amputee, is a below the knee amputation, and that happened in Ramadi in 2006. I happened to be in Fallujah the day it happened. I noticed the events as they were going on. And not knowing that I would know somebody involved in them. And then, after I come home, you know, we cross paths. And since I knew him, you know, make sure, you know, how are you doing? Well, he wasn't doing very good. And North Dakota is not a good place to... be living when you're struggling and self-medicating, because if you look at states that lead the nation in binge drinking, and we talk about this in the interview, I'll look it up, binge drinking rates by state. North Dakota used to be at the top. And, let's see, CDC, binge drinking. The highest ranked states for binge drinking. Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois. Illinois, odd, because they have such a large urban population. Indiana, Pennsylvania, Maine, Vermont. Yeah, it's an odd group of states. They're all northern tier states, long winter states. And so, interesting. And so, he was drinking. And when I'd see him and we'd talk, you know, he'd kind of, you know, I think like most guys do, he kind of played it off. You know, it's all, things are going all right. Then he loses his dad. And we didn't talk about it much in the interview, but his dad dies from a mixture of, alcohol and some mental health issues. And so anyway, So he loses his dad after that, which doesn't make what he's going through any easier. And he talks about that. But you know, he's an example of post-traumatic winning. And he's a living, walking, breathing example of what it is to win. And so you'll hear his interview today. And it's a really cool interview. And again, the other thing that he lives with, and I said this the other day when I was talking about this interview, but a lot of people deal with survivor's guilt, you know, and Mike and I have talked about it before. Why is he dead and I'm alive? And why did he get hit when I got missed? Why? So, you know, that's survivor's guilt, you know, and people deal with that. Ben's survivor guilt is like nobody's I've ever met. And I know there's others out there like him, but he's part of 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines. They're in Ramadi in 2005, and then they come home in 2006. So they're getting ready to go on a patrol one day in Ramadi, and he'll tell you the story. But I say this by as why the interview is a unique interview and a bit of an introduction. He's standing there, and his best friend, a corporal by the name of Van Alstyne, is standing next to him, and they're smoking a cigarette. And Van Alstyne goes to get the gun for the Humvee because he's going to gun today. And Van says something like, "I have a voice," or whatever he says. But anyway, long story short, and you'll hear it in his words here in a little bit. He says, "Hey, Van, do you care if I gun?" And Van Alstyne says, "No." So Ben grabs the 240. He gets up in the turret. Off they go. That day, Van Alstyne's killed when the ID detonates just on the backside of the front left tire, right in front of the driver's space, and he's killed instantly. And so, so it's not one of those survivor guilt things where, you know, I could have been killed or they could have been killed. Why were they killed, not me? It's not that. It's I should be dead. And the only reason I'm not is because I have a friend who didn't say, "Hey, go screw yourself, man. I don't want to drive today." He's a true friend. And he said, "Yeah, no problem." And that decision cost him his life. And that's on me. That was my idea. I asked. I did that. And my life is here. I'm here, and he's gone. So you can imagine. I mean, that's a little bit of shit to deal with, right? You're being wounded. And I think he would probably tell you, dealing with the amputation was not the most difficult part of his life after that event. Dealing with the mental part of how could that happen? So anyway, the interview's a good one. He's now a police officer in Colorado, Ben Lunick, and there's a great picture of him, and he tells the story. And I won't tell the whole thing, give it away, but the day he became a police officer, he said, "One of the great days of my life." And the Marine Corps is involved in it, believe it or not. And so, very, very cool stuff. Very, very cool stuff. And a really awesome interview to do. for a lot of reasons for me, knowing him since 2002, since 2004 when I met him, knowing that how he was struggling, worrying about him, and then slowly but surely seeing him turn his life around, and married now, with family, and living in Colorado, and living the life that he's wanted to live. And he is certainly, as I am sitting here late this morning, an example of post-traumatic winning. And he's a good dude, and he wants to continue to do good things. And so, anyway, so you're going to hear that in, when are you going to hear it? As soon as we go through a little bit of the news, since I'm late, and as soon as we get this thing going. So, good morning to you. My apologies for being late. Maybe I should just get up at 3 in the morning and start working. I might have to start doing that. Anyway, hope you're having a good Wednesday. I guarantee you it's going to get better, because you're going to hear an example of a good young guy, and who went through a lot and contemplated suicide and all of that. And he came out on the other side, an incredibly better version of himself. So, good morning to you. This appropriately begins the program, and once again, I apologize for my being in a state of unauthorized absence this morning. Dedicated to Ben Lunick, Lance Corporal, United States Marine Corps, retired. You don't hear that very often. And when you hear it, you know it's because they were medically retired. Congratulations to him on his toughness. The one of the things I'm toying with putting inside the Eight Commandments and the Two Goals is something that I say on a relatively frequent basis, and that is, life's not for pussies. Now, I don't know how to say that in there, because I've taken out all the McNamara-isms that I had in there, and things like your traumatic menstrual cycle. I didn't put that in to be graphic or anything like that. It's I put it in because it's the chunking of information, right? It connotes that you're going to have a cycle that affects not only your body, but your emotional well-being, too. And so, but people said, that makes me uncomfortable. Some uptight dudes, man. And, you know, it wasn't no woman said that to me that saw it. It was the men. So anyway, but, And I'll link this back to something I've been talking about the last couple of days. And that is, I do see a continuum between the way we raise young people. And as Lou said the other day, it's not helicopter parent anymore. It's lawnmower parent. That parents now remove every obstacle and every bit of adversity from their kids' lives, so that when they do hit a bump, when parents can no longer prevent it, you know, the they're crash cars. We're building, that's probably a good way to look at it. We're building crash cars these days. Now, for those of us old enough to remember what a crash car is, okay, I had those when I was a kid. And you put them all together, and and then you like ran them into something. And when you ran them into something, they exploded. And I used to, for whatever reason, man, I used to love those things. And that's what we're building these days in terms of kids. And so, I mean, for years, and my kids will like roll their eyes when they hear it. You know, life's not for pussies, man. And it's not. I mean, in my life, you know, relative to my sister and the different things that I, you know, my parents divorcing and never speaking again. You know, if you're going to be happy, you're going to fight for every bit of happiness and you're going to protect it. And it's not for the faint of heart. Maybe that's what I should write. I like it a little bit blunter, though. So maybe life's not for wussies. I got to figure that out. But you know, Ben is a great example of that. And so he kind of links into, you know, do you have the constitution? Do you have the internal structure to withstand life when it rolls on you like it rolled on him? And if you ask him, would you have swapped lives with Van? He'd say, in a heartbeat, I would have. This is, at one point, that thing was about, that was too much. It was going to kill me. That I had caused his death. You know, you hear Jeremiah Workman talking about the Navy Cross. I don't want this thing. I don't need this thing. All I want is those three guys back. And so it goes. So anyway, this is dedicated to Ben Lunick, to all the people that have supported him as he's gone through life, and come out a winner. And so, but he's not done. He's, you know, he wants to share his story. He wants to affect other people. He's already mentored kids in the area of physical fitness. And so, so this is dedicated to him. A living, breathing, no shit example of post-traumatic winning. And again, it's a rough road to deal with all that kind of stuff. So good on him. Good on him. So Ben, his wife, everybody who's touched his life, this is dedicated to all y'all, but especially Ben. That's when you're supposed to hit this.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front, with his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City. Standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man. But I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
We're winning today, by the way. Yeah. I love to tell winning stories. Currently cloudy and 40 in Quantico. It is cloudy and 50 at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, where I will be in 3 weeks. Yeah, fired up. Along with Mike Musselman and Josh Goldberg, going to go with them. From Boulder Crest. We're going to talk about post-traumatic winning to the 2nd Marine Division. It is foggy and 57 in Granbury, Texas. Sunny and 52 in 29 Palms. Sunny and 43 at Camp Pendleton. Yikes. In Iraq, it is dark, cloudy, and 57 in the city of Ramadi, where Ben was wounded. In Afghanistan, in the Helmand province, in the south central part of the state, clear, dark, and 51. As evening descends on the land of the poppy, and in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is partly sunny and 52, looking for a high of 70 today, 69 tomorrow, and 68 on Friday. That is a look at your weather here. So, don't touch that dial. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll check some news headlines, and then you'll hear from Ben Luna. More from All Marine Radio, belatedly, on this Wednesday. Next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Bells will be ringing.
Check some news headlines. The White House has backed down in its demand for the wall funding or the government shutdown. Now, I just talk about how it was curious. It was curious. A year ago, we did the government shutdown, and Senator Schumer is the one that led the shutdown. He's now campaigning against another shutdown that the president wants. The president wants border wall funding. And now evidently the White House is going to back either ease that claim somehow or other, back off that claim. So anyway, and then breaking news this morning from the Associated Press reports that Americans will be leaving northeastern Syria. So, I just want to take a look at the map, and we'll talk about where they are, what we're talking about. Northeastern Syria. Is, you know, we talked about the area where the Kurds live, blah, 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 blah. Is that stable enough? The Turks have talked about rolling across the border, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, the Kurds have been the ones that have stood with the United States as the United States has supported, really, they're on the ground fighting in the elimination of ISIS from the eastern part of Syria. So, you know, I'd be very interested to see how this all works out. Other stories in the news today from the world of the Marine Corps. Underwater race against time begins in search for the aircraft black boxes from the fatal Marine collision. Now, that's both the F-18 and the KC-130 that collided. So I'm still trying to track down all my aviation guys have been tied up. But just somebody to walk us through the procedure for this happening, because it's such an odd event that, you know, nobody can remember it ever happening. Because it's pretty predictable, right? The KC-130 is flying straight and true, and, you know, the F-18 approaches. Now, people will talk about, yeah, well, you know, they've hit weather or something like that, but never something significant enough for one aircraft to hit another aircraft. Anyway, the underwater search for the voice and data recorders for both aircrafts that were lost is currently in a race against time to find out what caused the devastating December 6 accident off the south coast of Japan that killed 6 Marines. The weapons officer from the Hornet survived the crash and was released from the hospital. The aircraft were in routine training mission that included refueling, but it is not clear if the aircraft were refueling at the time of the incident. All were based at the Marine Corps Air Station in Iwakuni, Japan. The race to find the black box and the voice recorders is not only to find out what brought down both aircraft, but to provide answers for the families, according to Lieutenant General Eric Smith, commanding 3MA. The flight data recorders will continue to emit a signal to help in detection for up to 30 days after the crash. The surviving Marine has gone through an initial interview, said 3MAF, but the Marine Corps has not identified that person. To search for the data recorders, Marines contracted a civilian ship and the Navy supplied a TPL-25 towed pinging locator that will search the ocean floor. That Navy team sailed from Yokosuka on Monday, said the 7th Fleet. That's underway today, General Smith said on December 17th. There's a search pattern so we know where the aircraft mishap occurred, but it is still a pretty wide area. So the ship will tow this Navy pinging platform. The depth of the water is between 9 and 13,000 feet deep. General Smith, quote, "It's a daunting challenge, but we're committed to finding the black boxes. That will tell us a lot, so we need it." And again, the bodies of the five inside the KC-130 have not been recovered. So that is obviously a huge issue as well. Here's a story about a story that's broke within the last hour. Troops may immediately withdraw from Syria as Trump declares victory over ISIS. The Trump administration is reportedly planning an immediate and total withdrawal of U.S. forces from Syria. The move comes as Turkish leaders are threatening an invasion of Syria that could pit U.S. advisors and U.S.-backed forces against Turkey, a NATO ally. Multiple news outlets are reporting variations of how definitive a U.S. withdrawal is at this point. The Wall Street Journal broke the story with the withdrawal as already being prepared. CNN reported that planning is underway for a full and rapid departure of U.S. troops. Reuters is reporting that the decision is still being considered. President Trump tweeted Wednesday morning, that would be this morning, that the U.S. has defeated the Islamic State in Syria, quote, "my only reason for being there." And we've talked about it before, but our presence in Syria is a counter to the Russian presence there and the Iranian presence there. So this story, I would say, is very concerning. Last week, Trump administration officials appeared to brush aside the idea of a withdrawal. Quote, "the military mission is the enduring defeat of ISIS," said Brent McGurk, Trump's special presidential envoy to the global coalition to defeat ISIS. Quote, "we have obviously learned a lot of lessons in the past, so we know that once the physical space is defeated, we can't just pick up and leave. So we're prepared to make sure that we do all we can to ensure this is enduring. Nobody is saying that ISIS is going to disappear. Nobody is that naive. So we want to stay on the ground and make sure that stability can be maintained in these areas." Officials estimate there's about 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria, but the precise number is not disclosed publicly. I don't understand. I don't understand. So, I don't understand. A couple other stories. Marines look for an IBM Watson-like artificial intelligence to plan large-scale war games. So the quest for artificial intelligence inside of the DOD obviously takes many forms. And I guess this artificial intelligence thing would create war games. Not surprised. I'm just leery of it because, you know, it's not like, so this thing does this, right? Then somebody has to go behind them and look. It's just not, okay, execute it. Watson produced it. Let's do it. I mean, somebody's got to go through and go through everything that it got programmed to do. So anyway, a story that's been around for a few days, but I haven't really discussed it. And that is an Antifa attack on a couple of Marines. The headline in the Marine Corps Times says, "I'm Mexican. Marines bewildered after being called Nazis, beat up by an alleged Antifa mob." Two Marine reservists testified December 13th in Philadelphia about an incident a month prior in which they were reportedly maced, beat up, and robbed by a group of 10 to 12 people with alleged ties to Antifa, the left-leading, often violent group self-proclaimed to be anti-racist. Visiting Philadelphia on November 17th, with their Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst, New Jersey unit for an event at a nearby hotel. Alejandro Godinez and Luis Torres decided to do a little sightseeing of the historic city, according to Philadelphia Magazine. But unbeknownst to the Marines, a controversial We the People rally was kicking off nearby, attracting a small alt-right group. With a much larger group, Tom Keenan and Thomas Massey included, of counter-protesters flooding the scene near Independence Hall, the magazine described. Spotting the two visitors, not in uniform at the time, Keenan approached and asked, "Are you proud?" according to the Marines' testimonies. Answer, "We're Marines," Goodness claimed to have responded, inevitably confused. Keenan persisted with his interrogation techniques. "Are you proud, boys?" he allegedly asked, referencing one of the far-right groups leading the rally. "I didn't know what Proud Boys meant," Torres told the judge. Goodness and Torres testified that immediately after the short exchange, about a dozen people, including Keenan and Massey, attacked the two Marines, punching and kicking them, spraying them with mace, and calling them Nazis. "I'm a Mexican," a bewildered Goodness said, as he shouted while being attacked and called a white supremacist. With the newly discovered ethnic information, Keenan and other members reportedly shifted to racial insults, calling Goodness a spick and a wetback, the Marine told the judge. Imagine the Everest-like mountain of idiocy one must scale to accuse a person of being a racist, only to then transition to accosting the same person with a barrage of racial slurs moments after learning of his Mexican background. As the group allegedly chanted, "Fuck him up," Goodness was maced at least six times, stomped, kicked in the side, and hit in the head, he told the judge. "The best way I can describe it is the sound of people chanting as a soccer stadium," Goodness testified, adding that Keenan was laughing, smiling, and having a good time. "Well, I could have died that day." Torres, meanwhile, said he was holding his hands up near his head to protect himself while Massey struck him repeatedly with full force. "We were outnumbered," Goodness said. "Two Marines against 10 to 20 assailants." When the attack finally subsided, Goodness said he tried to call 911 but was unable to see his phone's display due to being maced. Eventually, Torres was able to call the police, who were transported to the hospital and treated for injuries. Goodness testified that he's still dealing with the injuries he sustained during the attack and may require surgery. At one point during the proceeding, Keenan's attorney referred to the incident simply as a tussle, the report said. The judge, however, was having none of it. "This isn't like kids at the playground," he said. At the conclusion of the Marines' testimony, the judge ruled that Keenan and Massey, who have both been linked to Antifa on websites and social media, would stand trial for felony charges of aggravated assault and conspiracy. Keenan also faces ethnic intimidation, felony violence. And you should see these dudes, man. They're two white losers who think they're badasses. So I just, a little message for Antifa. You have officially made enemies from an organization that you probably don't want to have as an enemy. I'm just saying that this story, when it gets out in Marine news, that's not a good thing. That is not a good thing. That is not a good thing. So, anywho, I was reading that story. A few people had emailed it to me. It's just stupid, right? Stupid on top of stupid on top of stupid on top of stupid on top of stupid. Another story. Military could save hundreds of billions by capping pay, scrapping aircraft, slashing benefits, according to experts. What do you mean? Well, The problem is that those reforms include some of the most controversial and politically unpopular policies of the last few years, like limiting military pay raises. They already do that. Ending a host of military equipment purchases and cutting back on veterans' benefits. The document released last week in the Congressional Budget Office's annual options for reducing the deficit lists more than 120 ideas to reduce federal spending or boost federal revenues over the next 10 years. Authors said the goal is to reflect change, a range of possibilities of moves that lawmakers could make in dealing with government debt and escalating federal programming costs. 20 of the proposals would affect the Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs, including a plan to cut the Pentagon budget by 10%. Just remember, I mean, when it's I keep this slide in that what the federal government spends its money on. And that's what the slide talks about. And there's a second slide that I need to get that drills a little bit deeper into it. But here's the federal budget. And here's where the money goes. The money comes from federal taxes, $2.2 trillion. And it also comes from tax revenue trust funds, $1.13 trillion. This is 2015. So two-thirds of it comes from tax revenue, a third of it comes from trust funds. Okay, so of the approximately $3 trillion, $2.5 trillion is mandatory spending, Medicare and health, almost $1 trillion, Social Security, almost $1 trillion, food assistance, $100 billion, unemployment, $36 billion. Those two programs, Medicare and Social Security, two-thirds of what we spend our money on. Discretionary spending, $1.1 trillion. So the military, largest, the DOD is the largest chunk of that. Education, housing, international affairs, energy and the environment, and transportation all get small fractions of the budget. DOD is the largest item, 15% of the total budget. It is by far the vast majority of the, and I don't have the percentage right in front of me, the vast majority, well, probably 75% of discretionary funding. Hence, it becomes a target. But some of these things limit pay raises for troops. $18 billion. Why? Why just the troops? Why not for all federal employees? Narrow eligibility for VA disability benefits. Yeah, let's cut people on disability. The CBO plan would drop a host of conditions not related to military service. Illnesses like arterial sclerotic heart disease, hemorrhoids, and multiple sclerosis. So we trim that. Cancel the purchase of the F-35. Stop building aircraft carriers. End the VA's individual unemployment program for retired age veterans. Reduce military housing allowance to 80% of rental costs. Why would they have to pay out of their pocket to live? Replace thousands of troops with civilian workers. There you have it. The future of your country. I've got a couple more stories. And then we'll do the top five, and then you'll hear Ben Lunick. Now, yesterday you heard Grant Newsham. If you missed that, I brought Grant on because he made me unhappy. I was excited to read the story that Japan was going to convert a helicopter carrier into a aircraft carrier, and they'll buy the Marine version of the F-35, which is vertical takeoff and landing capable, and so they can, you know, now we're going to have a Japanese carrier battle group. Yes! Right? Japan plans its first aircraft carrier and big increases in defense spending. Grant said they weren't going to spend more. And it was the Japanese way to tell their own Department of Defense, too. So I'm going to have to email and get his reaction to this. Defense officials say Japan needs higher deterrence and increased missile defense and fighter capabilities as North Korea's missiles and nuclear threats remain unchanged in the absence of a concrete steps to dismantle them, and China's maritime activity has grown increasingly assertive. The new guidelines say Japan needs to be well prepared and to show it can withstand threats, noting the islands that it claims as its own, both to its north and to its south. So to its north, it fights with Russia. To its south, China are prone to natural disasters, and the coastline is dotted with vulnerable nuclear power plants. Now, what I'm curious to read this step is a major shift in Japan's post-war naval defense, which has lacked aircraft carriers in part out of concerns that they may remind Japan's Asian neighbors of aggression by Japan's wartime navy. Let's get over that. China, listen to this. China urged Japan to stick to its defense-only policy and peaceful development. Due to historic reasons, neighboring countries in Asia and the international community have long been highly concerned about Japan's moves in military and security fields, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying said. But it's okay, it's okay if the Chinese are on the move. Alright, I just want to see about Chief Cabinet Secretary Suga said the plan is mainly for fighter pilots in case of an emergency at sea, and that it falls within the minimum necessity allowed under the Constitution. He said the revised guidelines present what Japan truly needs to protect its people and portray that Japan's future defense should be. The price tag for the jets, $10 billion, will drive up Japan's defense spending, which has already climbed steadily for six straight years since Abe took office at the end of 2012. Japan spends plans to spend $2 billion to buy a pair of fixed-land U.S. missile defense systems, the Aegis Shore battery system, as well as other American missile interceptor. So, that's good. I'll send that to Grant and see if he still sticks to his position that he thinks that Japan has other priorities that will get it more bang for the buck than the aircraft carrier. President signed an order to create U.S. Space Command, so all the space geeks will be happy. And then a story that I think most of us saw yesterday, if you didn't, here it is. But, the VA left millions for suicide preventions unspent, according to a report. Despite public pronouncements on their continued focus on preventing veteran suicide, Veteran Affairs officials failed to spend millions available for outreach campaigns in 2018 and severely curtailed their messaging efforts, according to a new report released Monday. The GAO study found that $6.2 million set aside for suicide prevention, media outreach in fiscal year 2018, only $57,000, less than 1%, was actually used. In addition, social media content from VA officials on the subject dropped by more than two-thirds from fiscal 2017 to fiscal 2018. Two planned new public service announcements on the topic were delayed, and no public outreach messages were aired on national television or radio for more than a year. Veterans advocates, being the menses that they are, called the report shocking and disappointing. You think? And again, you know, okay, I don't want a VA bash, but these are the people that are that have promised to take care of your mental health. Right? Right? Wrong. Inept. In a word, inept. Top five stories in Early Bird this morning. Number one, Trump says he'll review the case against an Army Green Beret charged with murder. This is what could happen. You know, again, that story and the failure to allow military justice to take its course and then review it, to me, seems so wrong-headed, you know, as does the thing in Syria. It's like Elvis has left the building. And I listen to these people, you know, this guy's a hero. You know, and it's like, well, if you served your country and you went to Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria and you fought, then you're a hero. And they throw that word around like it's nothing. And now we're gonna, hey, let me tell you, sometimes people do bad things. And they need, let me tell you, here's a prediction. You know, and this is interesting, right? There is now a very high-level review going on about the Special Forces community. The Navy just issued a report saying, hey, nothing to see here. Keep walking. Nothing to see here. And we all know it's bullshit. We all know that if they start flipping rocks in that community, holy shit, and these investigations that you're seeing about drug use, about money, stealing money, and all the other bullshit that's gone on in a group that wasn't supervised very well and grew rapidly, if they start flipping rocks, and Mike and I have said this about any unit, when you find a unit that's doing things that aren't they're not supposed to, if you follow the trail and you start flipping over rocks, you'll find stuff that you honestly don't want to find. But if they do it once, trust me, they've done it for a long time. Anyway, So this case of the Green Beret. What does the evidence say that he did? And so now we're going to, now the President of the United States, because of the hue and cry on TV, is going to get involved in this. And it comes a week following, the Army preferred a murder charge against Major Matthew Goldstein in connection with the death of an alleged Afghan bomb maker he and his soldiers captured during the 2010 combat operation. So again, if the Army sees enough evidence, then to me, it goes forward. And there's an appropriate place. If the president wants to, you know, to review the case, then so be it. Is this all happening now because John Kelly's not around anymore? The first indications that the major may have been involved in the alleged killing didn't surface until a 2011 interview he had with CIA representatives in which he said he'd killed the man. He told the interviewers that after repeated attacks, his unit captured the alleged bomb maker, who was identified as a local Taliban. The same witnesses feared the man would retaliate against them. Goldstein and another soldier then allegedly took the suspected bomb maker off the base, shot him, and buried him. He returned the same night with more soldiers to move the body into an on-base burn pit. The subsequent investigation resulted in administrative action recommending his discharge, but no criminal charges. Goldstein remained in sort of a legal limbo on administrative leave. He saw his Silver Star earned in the same deployment and the Special Forces tab both revoked. Guy who you've heard on this program before and involved in a number of these cases, Colby Boakye, a retired Marine major and former judge advocate, who is now a civilian attorney specializing in military law, said that even without Trump's tweet, the case has been complicated by the length of time the Army has taken, the first investigation that wound up as an administrative penalty, and perceptions that the Army went after this because of bad publicity. Recent past presidents such as Barack Obama and George Bush have made comments on military investigations early in the process that also caused public stir. Notably, Bush learned of reports that Marines had killed dozens of Iraqi civilians in Hadith in 2005 from media reports and said his administration would look into the matter. Anyhow, and then Bo Bergdahl gets thrown into it. Oh, we let a guy like Bergdahl off. It's just these cases to me. You put them in the front window, you investigate the shit out of them, and then the truth has to go where the truth has to go. And for whatever reason, if this guy murdered somebody, then he murdered somebody. If this guy takes somebody who is a detainee off the base and then shot him, that's not what we do. It's not what we do. And so I don't get it. And again, it gives you some glimpse in the world. So if he did it that once, how many other times did he do it? I mean, that's what I'd be looking into. Where did he learn this? Why did he think this was okay? Is this something you did on a regular basis? How did this idea pop into your head? And why wasn't it that, you know, we've detained him? He'll become a detainee. We'll charge him, we'll present the case, blah, 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 blah. So, this is not in line with being the good guys. But I will tell you what, the American Special Forces, if that investigation gets made public, what you're going to see is, you're going to see organizations that grew too fast, were not held accountable, had budgets that will blow your mind, and bad things happened. Like just about any organization you would do that to. Now, did they do good stuff? Absolutely. They did good stuff. But there's a certain amount of professionalism that we expect from those units. Story number two, shut down less likely as White House says it will look elsewhere for border wall funding. And again, the DOD budget's been mentioned, yada, yada, yada. So we'll see. And that's why I go back a couple weeks to when supposedly Eisenhower used national security. But none of that money came from the DOD budget. If you read that story when the highway system was built, I mean, massive, massive, massive project. And Eisenhower had driven across country, I want to say in 1919, after World War I, and it took something like 32 days. They started in Philadelphia, and they wound up in San Francisco, something like that. And they drove the roads of the United States. It took a month to get all the vehicles there. So during World War II, he sees what Germany did, and as president, he says, we've got to do that. And so you see a lot of interstates go by Air Force bases out in the middle of nowhere for strategic reasons. So anywho, but when you read into that, none of the money was DOD money. None of the money was DOD money. So, again, I'm not sure how he finagled that. Number three, VA left millions for suicide prevention program unspent. We've discussed that. Number four, the Pentagon still doesn't know how much money it's getting in fiscal year 2020. Here's why that matters long term. Number five, commentary. How special ops can step it up comes from War on the Rocks. Here's the first paragraph. If Special Operations Command wants to remain a prioritized element within this construct of the National Defense Strategy and the broader Defense Department portfolio capabilities, it will have to undertake some critical self-examination, engage in rigorous force analysis and design, and make some hard choices about future roles, missions, and associated capabilities. And again, here are the four recommendations that get made. First, despite being deprioritized by Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, counterterrorism will continue to be a necessary and vital mission for the Department of Defense in coming decades. Recently retired General Stanley McChrystal, he's a special ops guy, as saying the best the United States could hope for in Afghanistan was to keep a reasonably sized force there and to muddle along as best it could. Some were disappointed with his comment. I would submit that he is both right and that his thoughts extends to the counterterror mission globally, so that it's got to be manageable in terms of financial. It means that whatever their inclinations for missions may be, they will have to maintain a set of task forces that can disrupt the most capable terrorist groups from striking the American homeland. That has to be both affordable and sustainable. Second, while Special Operations Command will need to maintain a sizable and sustainable counterterrorism force going forward, the DoD will also need to play a strong role in the pre-conflict competition with state adversaries. That's third, Special Operations Command needs to seek help from Pentagon leaders and especially the service chiefs in offloading some of its current missions in order to create space for what I've described above. Again, Special Operations Command is greedy. They don't like to hand off stuff to conventional forces, and it causes friction. Fourth and finally, the Special Operations Command should advocate for increased experimentation and engagement with the services for integrated wrapping conventional force packages to deliver unique capabilities for gray zone environments. So again, it's for unique mission sets involving, but again, that requires Special Operations community to come back to the conventional community, which historically they don't like to do. All right, we'll take a break. On the other side of this break, you're going to hear an awesome interview by a great young Marine. His name is Ben Lunick, and it was great fun last night to do it, and so I'm happy that you will get to hear it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the next hour and 45 minutes. You're going to get to meet a young man who life dealt some pretty rough cards to. And then on the other side of that, came out as a winner. And so he's a North Dakota boy. You'll enjoy him. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on this Wednesday, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.